Steve Haskin, standing by with an early visit. And, Steve, good morning.
Good morning. Happy birthday.
Thank you. And speaking of birthday, it is, of course, the day after mine, so that means it's Marty McGee's.
Okay.
Well, Marty was born, he, I, and Jay Privman, all the same age, and born 17 days apart, essentially. And it's also Chick Matisse's birthday. So, Paul Sr., happy birthday, Chick, as well today. That was discovered on Tuesday, that Chick's birthday was the day after ours. Were you listening just now? Did you? Always a treat when Tom Skiffington joins us.
I heard bits and pieces of it because when I go on, the thing starts at zero and ends at 10 seconds, and it goes to 10 seconds and it dies. So I got to shut it off and start all over again, and goes for another 10 seconds and then dies. It usually goes, you know, the whole segment, but it's only going like 10, 20 seconds at a time.
Then you need to clear your cookies and cash from your on the computer. That should solve that.
Okay, I'm not sure what that means, but I'll have to find out.
You've been working on, how many years now have you been working on a computer?
I keep hearing about cookies. I have no clue what the hell they are.
Well, I guarantee you, it's part of whatever issues you have with computers. That it's a big part of it.
it could be.
All right. Well, we will.
The weird thing is this computer. I mean, we had lost our Wi-Fi on our TV, which it connected the other day, just for like a minute or two, and then it came back on. And ever since it's come back on, my computer's been slow. I don't know why.
Well, we will. I'll get Casey to help you on this. All right.
Okay. I'll do anything I can to eliminate cookies.
You can't have it so that you can't listen. You want to be able to listen. Anyway, as always, Skiffington is just, he's a treasure. His experience.
I remember when he was a young guy.
Yeah.
I remember when he started training in thoroughbreds. You know, he always had the reputation of being a grass trainer, you know, like a lot of the steeplechase trainers that go into flat racing. So he always had a reputation. But I always thought he was extremely sharp. Yeah, and he had some good horses. But, you know, like a lot of these so-called grass trainers, you know, never really an impact on the Triple Crown or anything.
Well, I reached out to him to talk and pay tribute to Tommy Walsh, and I knew we would hit some topics of the day. And speaking of Tommy Walsh, you know, after he stopped riding, he had a long, you know, and somebody that never had a whole bunch of, he never had a big barn. But the horse that came up today, among there's a couple I remember, you know, as I started to really enjoy the game, Missy Moo, I Love You, and Omadon.
Yeah, Missy Moo, I Love You was a good filly. My main theory is that always bet on a former steeplechase trainer named Tommy. it seems like they're all over the place, and they're all good trainers. They're all interchangeable.
Well, there's a couple of, do they have to be former steeplechase riders?
No, anybody in the steeplechase world. It seems like it's like every other jockey or trainer in steeplechasing is named Tommy. You know, you get all these Irishmen named Tommy.
What about Patty? There's a lot of Patty.
Yeah, but Paddy, I mean, most of the Paddies stay in Ireland, but a lot of the Tommies come here.
I love it.
Yeah, there's not much doing now. It's pretty slow.
There's a little. What did you make of the Bob Hope performance?
I was very impressed. I thought he ran a very game race. I mean, I thought I was impressed with both horses, the first and second. It was basically a match race. The other two horses were insignificant. He really didn't do much. And the two favorites, went at it. And Strong Constitution made a good run at him. But credit to High Velocity. He found another gear and started inching away at the end. Ran like a good horse. You know, and the thing is, you know, when Baffert does something like that, I mean, you know, when he scratches the one you think might be the better horse to run in another spot, you know, you got to put a lot of weight on the horse he decides to run. And I know he likes this horse, so it's just another one you have to add to the list. The list is growing constantly.
I'll tell you what, I was
trying to come up with a top 10 or a top 12, it's going to be ridiculous. You're going to have to leave out 10, 15, you know, really promising horses. What were you saying?
I was impressed with the fact that the way he finished and the fact that, you know, it looked at one point like he was being... You know, he was being confronted and was being swallowed up and then just eased himself forward and went on. And, you know, I always like when a horse looks like, you know, he's really just starting to extend himself late in the race like that. I thought.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't being beaten up, you know. He just, I thought Van Dyke ran a very confident race. He didn't panic when... When Strong Constitution, and remember, High Velocity wasn't even a favorite in the race, even though he was even money, he still wasn't a favorite. But you know, he never panicked. He just let that horse come to him. It looked like he felt like he had a lot of horse under him. You know, and you know, he hit him a few times left-handed at the end in final 16th, and he opened up, like a good horse. And the second horse hung in there tough. You know, finished whatever it was, 4.5 or so. Ahead of the third horse, you know, it was just, you know, big gaps between the other horses. But, you know, listen, he's got all the tools. You know, it's quality road out of a Dixie Union mare, so he's definitely going to go a distance. And it looks like the West is starting all over again.
Well, there's more, too. There's actually, Baffert's got one. I saw another West in the entries.
Well, he's got one for the West, and he's got one for Godolphin.
Yeah, and the Godolphin. It's funny. It's funny to see the Mandela horse. Right next to they're going to line up together. So, you know, in another era, that would be an entry. Not anymore.
Well, a lot of people probably think it's it should be.
No, exactly. That's an ongoing topic. How about since we went in this direction too? How about that Larry Best, the $1.2 million Into Mischief?
He's supposed to be a really nice horse. I remember seeing that horse when I was in Saratoga, when I was over at Don's barn, and I know they've always been very high in that Snapchat. So, you know, it'll be interesting. He's got an outside post, so we'll have to see. We'll have to overcome that. But, yeah, every week now you have to watch out. I mean, there's maiden races all over the place. I mean, Churchill's got like 3 2-year-old maiden races, a couple of them around 2 turns. So, you know, you just have to wait and see what comes out of these races. We just don't know... You know, the ones you think are going to be good horses, you know, just because, you know, you got a $1 million horse doesn't guarantee anything.
No.
You know, so, So it'll be interesting. I mean, that like I said, that race at Del Mar has got a lot of possibilities. There's some really nice, nice horses with potential in there.
We should mention this will be the sixth on Saturday. Winners Club as well for Neil Drysdale making a second start. And
well, I love horses who break slowly, you know, and still run a good even race. And, you know, I like the fact that his horse just ran evenly the whole way. He should definitely improve second time out by Bayern, too. So that's kind of interesting. Haven't seen many of him or his around.
And on the pedigree side of things, going to have to work a trip out of the rail, but how about Ancient Warrior inside for Hollendorfer? Here's a Constitution colt. Homebred for Al Graziani.
Yeah, well, I mean, constitutions, I mean, are everywhere. I mean, the horse is coming off of four bullet workouts. So, you know, if he's got the speed he's shown in the mornings, then the inside post probably is not going to hurt him. But, you know, when you can work that fast, that consistently, and we're not talking about, you know, just horse going out there and, you know, 47 and change. Three of his four bullet workouts were six furlongs. So, yep. he's got, and they gave him a sharpener this time out from the gate. And it'll be interesting to see how he breaks. Again, when you have a rail, you have to break well. And he's got a lot of bottom under him. So it's just a question of how much speed he has coming out of the gate. But again, certainly the pedigree is there. Like I said, that's what's great about this time of the year.
Yeah,
you've got horses. You just there's no way of telling how good they were. You know, the West's horse that we were talking about that Baffert has. I mean, he ran once and did nothing in there. He showed a little speed and then tired badly. But you know, a lot of these horses have enough. You know, they always have the potential of improving. Second time around.
The most important start of most horses' careers will be that second start. It'll be the start that
shows
the most
improvement. Plus, Baffert's using J.C. Diaz. I don't even know who that is.
That's the bug boy that has turned some heads.
Yeah, he hasn't had many starts. I'm just not sure how good he is. But, yeah, I mean, he gets in there with 5 pounds off, so... Well, see, Baffert obviously saw something good in this kid.
Back to Ancient Warrior for a second, the Constitution for Jerry Hollendorfer. The dam, that Wellington beauty, and we just got off the phone with Tom Skiffington in Wellington, and he is a Wellington beauty. That dam happens to be a sister. She's by Forestry, but she's a sister of Loose on the Town. That's a Lynch. That's a Brian Lynch stake horse.
Right. Well, again, I mean, the main thing here is Constitution. I mean, if you're looking for a stallion with a fast start, boy, you can't get much faster than he's. I mean, his horses are all over the place, and they're all running well. So it's going to be, it'll be interesting to see how this horse does. You know, again, like we talked about last week, another Pletcher trained sire that's really doing very well.
He had another
2-year-old last week by Palace Malice that looked very impressive. And Mr. Monomoy.
Well, that's the Monomoy brother.
Yeah. But, you know, so it's another Palace Malice. So, but he looked impressive winning off by himself at Churchill. But a lot of these horses, you know, if you look at these maidens, the majority of them, win on the lead. So you really don't know. When a horse wins on the lead first time out, it doesn't necessarily mean it's a speed horse. A lot of horses are just so much the best, they just put them right on the lead. And that's it. And then, but, you know, it's, I always find it more interesting to see what they do second time out, see if they can come off the pace and make sure that they don't get into a habit of having to be on the lead. It's okay to be on the lead, but having to be on the lead is what you don't want.
Agreed.
So it'll be interesting to see a horse like this, who, you know, who's by Palace Malice, just to see next time out if he can come from off the pace. That's why it's a lot of times you see these, you know, impressive maiden winners, and the, you know, a good portion of them don't repeat when they have to face winners. So that second race is always the real important race. You know, sometimes a horse catches your eye first time out when they might come from off the pace, or they show a tremendous burst of speed, or they win under wraps. Certainly, you know, when you see something like that, you know, you have something special first time out. But a lot of these first timers that come out and win first crack out, you definitely want to see the second start, just to see what their comfort zone is, what their best style of running is. You know, especially on the Derby trail. You know, when you're on the Derby trail, you have to make these determinations, because, you know, from now through, you know, February, even early March now, you're going to get horses that, you know, they're going to come out first time out and look like you justify. Look like they have tremendous potential, and you don't know what to do with them. So, you know, you might love what you see, but do you risk putting them in the top 12 and consider them a Derby horse, and then they come out second time and they run eighth in their second start, you know, and then you say, oh, I got suckered into that one. So it's difficult. You just don't know what to do. That's why the knocking on the door section is important, because, you know, I can write about them without putting them in the top 12 and just saying, watch out for this horse, and just talk about all his attributes that you see first time out that he might be able to incorporate, you know, into a normal style of running.
On that topic, Steve, actually, speaking of, and I'm just looking for the chart, because I know that you had an interest and were waiting for him to run back yesterday at Aqueduct. We should include, I got a couple of other horses I want to ask you about on this topic, but Three Technique came back and won yesterday.
That's a good horse, I'm telling you. He's one horse. I mean, I wrote extensively about him, you know, after his first start, and I was expecting huge things from him. You know, unfortunately, he had a setback. But that's a really nice horse. Anybody, if you want to see what an impressive debut looks like, just go watch this horse's first start. You know right off the bat that this is a good horse. You know, I mean, I would have been shocked if he didn't come back and win.
Well, I want to find. I spent a couple of minutes this morning and poked around. The race did not come back fast, as it happens.
That's
yesterday.
Okay. That doesn't bother me.
No,
none of these aqueduct races. I mean, you know, a lot of horses coming back with low numbers. You know, the track is always slower. To me, these, you know, buyer speed figures at Aqueduct in November and December, I don't pay much attention to them.
Well, what's interesting, and I cannot believe this drives me crazy. There it is. Jeez, literally the last sheet of paper. If you go back to the race that he came out of, you've got two other Next Out winners that both, it's funny, they've got some fascinating parallels. Wayne O, which is Asmussen and owned by Spendthrift with My Racehorse, came back to win out of that race with an 80 buyer, and Nesher Island for Stanley Huff and Sagamore came back to win as well. He's a hard spun. it just so happens that both of them were Stone Street bred. And Nesher Island, a $250,000 purchase. Waino was $750,000. And so that race between those two and Three Technique, there's a lot to watch out of that race.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, like I said, there are times when you see a horse first time out, and everything that you look for in a young horse, you see in this horse. You know, just the way he holds his legs under him, how professional he is, if he shows some kind of a turn of foot, if he shows gameness. I mean, there are a lot of things to look for, but when a horse incorporates everything into that one race, and he's got the pedigree to match, you have to take that horse seriously.
Since we're at New York, what did you hear Gary Gullo with me on Monday? His New York bred maybe more than just a nice state bred, the keeping state bred company, Big Q.
Yeah, no, I don't know.
All right, go back to watch the stake from Saturday when you get a chance.
Well, speaking of back with the day, it was nice to see Complexity come back like that.
Uh huh.
You know, that horse obviously looked like he had tremendous potential.
It's amazing.
He came back the way you would like to see a Champagne winner come back. I mean, he just destroyed his field. I guess all eyes now are going to be on next, next weekend. You get all those big races at Churchill. Everyone wants to see how Tis the Lord does in the Kentucky Jockey Club. We'll see what happens in the Remsen. So, Independence Hall is not going to run in that now, which is fine. I think it's the right move.
I agree.
I just don't like rushing horses into mile and eighth races. You know that. I like the fact that they're waiting with him after that first after that maiden race. See if they come back in a race like the Jerome or so. Give them a little time between races. I just think, there's mile and eighth, and then they usually run the Remsen. There was another mile and eighth, a nice maiden one last week, and he ran a mile and eighth and like 154 and change. A lot of those races, and the Remsen does it all the time. That's why the Remsen doesn't have a great record in the Derby. It just seems to dull horses. There's nothing wrong with it if you have horses, with a lot of bottom. And then, as I mentioned all the time, and then you shorten them up to give them a little sharpener. But trainers don't do that anymore. So they wind up with horses going on a Derby trail that are just getting dulled by these slow two-turn races.
You've been banging that drum.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't do any good, so...
Doug O'Neill listens, right?
Doug O'Neill does. Well, he did it with Nyquist, and he won the Derby. And Exaggerated did the same thing. He was in the same race and finished second in the Derby and won the Preakness. But trainers don't want to learn. They don't want to learn from history. Like I said, if you go back to the 50s, 60s, and 70s, every single Derby winner and every single champion started their 3-year-old campaign in the sprint. That's the way it was done. If you talk to John Neighbor, he'll tell you. He said he always did that. You start a horse up, you sharpen him up, and then they stretch out, and they've got that little sharpener under them. But, Mile Nathan, the Remsen, and then you go in the Mucho Macho Man and the Fountain of Youth and the Florida Derby and whatever, Bluegrass State. By the time you get to the Derby, you wind up with a horse like Marconi, who was very impressive winning at a mile and eighth, and just became so dull that he couldn't become a Derby horse, and now he's like a marathon-type horse. So if you're looking for a Derby horse, You know, if you start them in the, I'm not saying, it happens to all horses in the Remsen. But, you know, you look at a horse like Catholic Boy. He didn't get good until the summer. But, you know, sometimes you just have to go by history.
Nothing wrong with using proven methods.
And you know what the problem is? I'll tell you what the problem is. The problem is us stupid Derby points that we have now that refuses to give points to sprint races. I mean, why wouldn't you give points to the races like the Hutchison? And like I said, it used to be every horse would start off in the Bayshore Stakes at Aqueduct or in the Bahamas at Hialeah or in the San Vicente at Santa Anita. You know, the Hutchison Stakes at Gulfstream. You know, all these horses had these races, but you're eliminating them. So trainers now, we got to have points every time I go to saddle a horse. You know, got to have points. So, I don't know. I mean, if that's the way they want to, you know, to come up with a point system, you know, fine. But I think we're not doing justice to the horses and the best way of getting to the Derby. I just don't see why you don't give. I know the reason why. Oh, we don't want to give points to sprints because we don't want sprinters in the Derby. Well, I mean, you know, how many? But you don't issue points to every sprint. The issue is points to the first sprint to allow horses to get points in sprint. Those horses aren't going to run in sprints again.
Right.
If they run in sprints again, then they're not going to run in the Derby. You know, if you're running the Hutchison Stakes and then you're running the Swale, you're not going to run in the Derby. You know, you got to be out of your mind. So don't give points to the later sprints, but give points to the early sprints. So to give horses an opportunity to sharpen up, and then, you know, and then to stretch out. And at least you give these trainers an incentive to sprint their horses early on, rather than just the same old mile and a 16th, mile and then your mile and 70 yards, mile and 16th, mile and 8th, you know, and then you got a bunch of dull horses. Why do you think we don't get fast run derbies anymore? You know, sure, somebody's got to win the Derby, and they have to win by coming off of two-turn races, because that's all there are. There's nothing to compare them with. But you look at the times of the Derby, you would have run 203, 204, 202 and change. I mean, how many times do you see horses come even close to 2 minutes anymore? Because they've gotten slow. And the reason they've gotten slow, I mean, Secretariat, like every other horse, like I said in the 70s, started out in the Bayshore. He sharpened them up. And then he ran one turn again in the Gotham. Set a stakes record in 133 and change. You know, to me, that's the formula to win the Derby and go past the Derby. But to get it to go to Derby, if you can have any prayer at all of running a decent time in the Derby, coming any close, forget about Secretariat or even Monarcos and Northern Dancer. But you know, if you want to come in range of at least a 201 or so, 201 right. Change. We don't see that anymore because these horses are getting too turned out. You know, by the time they get to the Derby, they're dull.
And you can't say
and the thing has changed now because you know you look at the Triple Crown winners. You know, American Pharoah was lightly raced. He had a long, time between races. And American Pharoah was a great horse. Justify was a great horse. Well, he would have been a great horse. But, you know, these are horses, and they had a great trainer. You know, bad or mediocre trainers don't train Triple Crown winners. You go back to all your Triple Crown winners, they're all top class trainers. You know, Bob Baffert knows how to train these. I mean, you got to remember that. Yeah, he won two Triple Crowns, but look how close he came to winning Triple Crowns before that.
Absolutely.
You know, he came within half a length of one, and he came within a nose, a dirty nose, of winning another Triple Crown. I mean, Baffert could easily have four Triple Crown winners. So do you say to yourself, is it the horse? Or is it the trainer? Is it the rare trainer who knows how to do it? Like a Sonny Jim Fitzsimmons. You know, like a Lucien Laurent, who had, you know, who obviously had a super horse. Like a Laz Barrera. Billy Turner was not, you know, a Hall of Fame trainer. But Billy Turner was, he was still a top trainer who, you know, came from the steeplechase world. But, you know, you look at Ben Jones, and you look at Max Hirsch and Sonny Jim Fitzsimmons. These are the guys who win the, who won all the Triple Crown races. You don't see these ordinary trainers winning Triple Crowns. You have to know how to do it.
Yep.
And I think that's what Baffert has proven. You know, is Justify a great horse? Nah, he's not, probably, you know, probably he's never going to go down as one of the all-time greats. And neither is American Pharoah. He's going to go down as a great horse, but not one of the all-time greats. But you look at them, you know, you compare them to a horse like, you know, he almost won the Triple Crown with Real Quiet. Real Quiet, a great horse. You know, Silver Charm was still a Hall of Fame horse, but not one of the great horses of all time. In the past, when you won the Triple Crown, if you were affirmed, you were Seattle Slough, and you were Secretariat, and you were Citation, you were Whirlaway, you were Count Fleet, you were Gallant Fox, you know, you were one of the all-time greats with an all-time great trainer. We don't get that combination anymore.
Well, one thing that, you know, I'm glad you brought up complexity, because I hadn't gotten to the Aqueduct results yesterday.
He's the one who made three technique strikes slow. He ran 122 and change, and three technique 125 and change.
Yeah, 101 buyer for him, and a 101 buyer for Bodie Express. And we should also note,
going back to
the weekend, Mucho came back and ran an improved race at Churchill. And I don't know if Mott is going to keep him short or what the plan is. But
good question. I had him ranked high as a Derby horse. I thought he was a distance horse, and Mott started running him short, and he had his problems, you know. And it's good to see him back, because, you know, I loved his race in the Hopeful. I loved his. He's like three technique. Absolutely loved his maiden race. His maiden win. Thought he was going to be. I thought he was going to be an exceptional horse. So.
It's encouraging. It's funny, because here are three horses that, when we were leading in toward Breeders' Cup, Steve, this is kind of funny. Here are three early season 3-year olds that nobody, I don't recall anybody bringing their names up, you know, in September, October. And Mucho, we'll see what happens with him. But to get Complexity and Bodie Express to come back and run, you know, allowance races the same day, and both perform
both
to a level that,
too.
Yeah, for them to perform to a level that immediately gives you, you know, some real excitement about, you know, adding them to the, you know, to the handicap division after the first of the year. I mean, this is. How about Gustavo Delgado? I mentioned this at the top of the show. How about a guy that accomplished, with an all-time leader in Venezuela? He said he never had a track record holder.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was shocked by that. As many races as he won down South America.
That is interesting. But it's nice to see these early, like you said, these early 3-year-olds. Who, for some reason, or, you know, or late 2-year-olds or so, you know, horse like Complexity, but these horses that, you know, might be on the Derby trail early on, look like they had potential, and they disappear. Complexity, who, you know, turned out, you know, to be a disappointment, but that, you know, you give them all this time off, because you don't know what kind of nagging problems these horses have, so they give them time off and they bring them back. In fact, I'd love to see this, you know, this Nick's go. You know, it looked like he was going to be any kind, and he just completely fell apart.
Yeah.
But, you know, it would be nice to see a horse like that come back strong. You know, it happens a lot. I mean, it happens a lot where horses, look, you know, start off promising. They become disappointments. You know, the next thing you know, you forget all about them because they're out for 10 months or so. And then they come back, and they come back to the way they were when they started out their careers.
Yeah, agreed. And of course, Pony Express. This erases, I think, some of the, you know, some of the craziness that associated with his fascinating early season and Triple Crown exploits.
He was not your typical early Derby horse.
To some degree, what he's doing now kind of backs up
exactly
that performance behind Maximum Security.
Yeah,
going back to the Florida Derby.
Exactly, and that's what I was talking about before. That's what I love to see. I love to see horses who show potential. And then a lot of these horses, they show potential and they get messed up by the Kentucky Derby. Kentucky Derby messes up a lot of horses. And sometimes, you know, a lot of these horses that run 15th or 16th in the Derby, you know, you forget about them. They, you know, the Derby takes a toll, and then they show up 8 months later, and they're back to the way they were before the Derby. They need to be rejuvenated.
Don't we all?
Yes. Well, some of us are able to, and some of us aren't. What did you think of, speaking of the Derby, what did you think of the California Chrome announcement?
Well, I'm never one to, you know, read too much into those kinds of decisions. And certainly from a financial standpoint, and given the syndication partners, and it's funny you brought it up before I did. It's sitting right here next to me. If I was going to talk to you, the reaction on on the internet, it's insane. What are these people? Did they understand what this is? They understand it's a business, right? Does that occur to anybody?
Well, that's the whole thing. You just said the key word. Okay, about business. There's a difference between business and greed. And a lot of people think, oh, you know, everybody's so greedy now. Well, listen, that's the way of the world, is to make a buck. So to me, it's not an indictment on the breeders or owners or so. It's an indictment on the sport as a whole. And I say that with the emphasis on the word sport. Like I said, it's not about greed, because you know, this sport has become, you know, it's become more about making money, you know, which is the natural order of things in the world today. But the thing that I have against it is that we don't even give a stallion a chance to be a failure. They're like stocks. If the immediate earnings potential is not there, if it's not positive, in the words of Gordon Gekko, dump it. You know, that's it. I mean, here's a horse whose horses haven't even reached the yearling sales yet. They're making the judgment is being made on weanling sales. They're not even a year old. You know, with all athletes, if you produce, you know, you make $100 million. If you don't, you're out in the street. You know, the days of the sportsman in horse racing are long gone, and now it's about the bottom line. And again, it's not an indictment on anybody, whether owners or breeders. The difference in racing now is that the athlete, you know, I would like to say this almost has like a three-pronged responsibility. You know, like the human athletes, he has to produce on the playing field. But instead of getting these decadent contracts, horses gain the privilege of being sent to top breeding farms and being bred to the best mares. But where this sport proves it has sunk to new lows compared to the way it was, a lot of the stallions, like California Chrome, they don't get a chance to be top stallions. You know, first they have to prove themselves at the sales. First, you have to prove yourself at the yearling sales. But now, in the case of Chrome, you got to prove yourself at the weanling sales. So they're being judged on by what others think of their offspring who aren't even a year old. And to me, that's where racing has declined. You know, California Chrome didn't even get a chance to prove himself at the yearling sales because his offspring didn't sell well enough as yearlings and had to lower his stud fee. And, you know, the syndicate, you know, TaylorMade Farm and the syndicate members, you know, they look ahead. They said, oh, the future doesn't look too bright. So we'll just get rid of them. You know, we're not going to make money on them, so I get rid of them. Which, again, like I said earlier, is the way of the world. The entire sport now is more about sales and profits and pushing young horses beyond their limits at the two-year-old sales more than it is about racing itself. Horses in the past were given a chance because the majority of them, and this is the key, the majority of them were homebreds who were born to race and not born to sell, as most of the horses today
right.
are.
Right.
You know, California Chrome is the most popular stallion in America. I don't know if you've ever been to Taylor. I've been to TaylorMade a few times. Fans flock there every day to visit him. They worship him. They even have VIP tours complete with champagne and hors d'oeuvres if you want to spend hundreds of dollars just to come visit California Chrome. About a mile down the road from TaylorMade is the California Chrome store. There's a store where you go in there and purchase California Chrome shirts and bibs and T-shirt, you know, hats and shirts and stuffed animals. And I mean, they have all kinds of stuff there. So, you know, but because his babies, who, like I said, not even 1 year old, didn't sell up to expectations and his stud fee had to be lowered, that was it. Get rid of him, make a profit while you have the chance, and don't give the stallion a chance to prove whether he's a good sire or not. I can see if a horse proves, all right, he's not good. First few crops, he hasn't done anything. But, you know, Japanese made an offer. They're willing to take a chance on him. We're not.
Well, he had some things that were going against him from
the get-go. Well, I know his pedigree certainly goes against him.
Exactly. And it's very hard to have expected, personally, I mean, that if you're a mare owner and you're making decisions that, you know, that first year when he was available.
Let me ask you a question, Steve. Let me say, his pedigree didn't change from the time the syndicate members bought into him.
Right.
So if you're going to buy into a horse knowing his pedigree, then shouldn't you at least give him a chance to be a failure?
Well, you're not when you buy into him. This is an interesting conversation, and it's something that I would you know bring you know any number of people in. John Secura would be ideal for this. When you syndicate, they're not people aren't speculating necessarily on they're speculating on his produce. But it's an investment as much as anything. I mean, and this is as an investment. There's the opportunity here to, you know, to take a profit now, and you know,
well, where's the profit come from?
The profit's going to come from the
profit's going to come from hopefully somebody buys him. That's the only profit there is in the horse now. He may have a profit you don't know about. You'll never know if he's going to have if he'd make a profit in this country.
Well, the profit is from the syndicate buyers, what they paid for a piece of the syndication, and what they're going to be getting from the Japanese buyer.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying. But yeah, I mean, they have to have an offer. But when they bought into California Chrome, did they buy into him? With the speculation that the Japanese were going to make an offer and they were going to make a profit, or did they buy into him because they wanted to have a California Chrome race, which they won't now?
Well, it depends on how many of them.
Exactly. I mean, you know, I mean,
had mares
on a long-term basis. Yeah,
right.
Of course,
I mean, that's haphazard, but we'll have this conversation. To me, you're buying in with the expectation that Mark Taylor is going to help you be successful with your investment in one direction or another. It sounds, based on the comments from him, that he would have preferred to see it through and to see, but he understood that when the shareholders voted, that they, you know, saw the opportunity to get their money back and more. And the way people are acting, this is not some new phenomenon.
It's been going on. It happens every year. It happened with
Sunday Silence. What about Sunday Silence? Why don't we just go right to the obvious parallel?
Yeah. Well, in the Sunday Silence, you know, he looked like he still had, he had the pedigree. He could have been a tremendous stallion in this country and probably would have been. But I mean, the Japanese made such a huge offer on him, and I think Arthur Hancock was like disappointed in the breeders that weren't sending mares. And more recent, it was same with I'll have another, and nobody was interested in him. So I mean, they had no choice. I remember when a Fleet Alex retired, they were looking at making like $30-40 million on the horse, and they wound up syndicating him for a fourth of what they expected to. Because you don't know. That's the whole thing. That the bottom line is, the sport is no longer dominated by homebreds. This is what separates the sport now and the sport in the past.
Right.
Homebreds, you know, were born and raised to race, and under the careful eye of their breeders, who would see them every day, send them to their trainer that they had. Now it's dominated by breeders who breed to sell, which starts the chain reaction of profit seeking by owners.
Right.
Which is what we're discussing. Or yeah. You ask an owner, what is he looking for? He's looking to make a profit. Well, that's not what owners did in the past. And I know it sounds like, oh, he's, you know, living in the past, but I did live in the past. and I did see horses, well, the majority of horses were homebreds. And they were big, they were strong, you know, they were strong-boned horses. They were well taken care of. They didn't go through the rigors of these ridiculous 2-year-old sales where they had to work in 9 seconds. You know, we have owners who are basically mindless, who just go there and say, oh, he worked in 9 seconds, I'll buy him. But, you know, where's the judging of horse flesh? So I'm just saying the sport has changed so dramatically. And again, you know, I've seen the sport the way it was with homebreds, and those horses stayed sound. I never saw horses break down. They were sound horses, and you knew where they were bred, who bred them, who took care of them throughout their whole career, who they were going to go to. But that's, you know, what racing and breeding is today. And it's also, like I said, it's also the way of the world today. So there's no one to blame. Horse racing is just a microcosm of the world we live in. So you know what's going to happen? 15 years from now, California Chrome's going to return to America to live out his days at old friends or some other home. People are going to come out and see him and worship him. And they're going to come out and see this sway-backed old horse and reminisce about how beautiful and majestic he used to be. And that's, you know, that's what we'll remember of California Chrome visiting him, you know, just reminiscing. And just like going to see a lot of these old horses, but you know, the racing fans, I'm not talking about the owners. I know they got their profits to be made, but the racing fans who are going to be deprived of seeing this horse year after year and age gradually, he's going to age in 15 years overnight. You know, next time they see him, he's going to be an old horse. But again, that's not owners' concerns and it's not breeders' concerns. Maybe a small part of it should be. Sometimes, you know, with a popularity. I mean, like I said, even American Pharoah is not as popular. I don't think he gets as many visitors as California Chrome. California Chrome has these tours every day. They just flock to that farm. Again, it's how you look at it. It's basically the change in the game today from the way it was. It's these horses are like stocks. Basically, when you buy into a horse, it's like buying into a stock. You project ahead.
Very much. Yeah.
You know, oh, it's, you know, this doesn't look like it's got earnings potential. So let's sell now, you know, while we can make a profit. So that's what horse racing is now. You have to accept it. It's not the sport that we used, that I used to know, and old fogies like me used to remember.
Well, the market conditions are you know, generally, you know, they're going to prevail for the most part, even with something that is, you know, somewhat strange and artificial. I mean, in terms of the way in which you know, people quote unquote invest, but I mean, you think about it, Steve. It's not necessarily a direct parallel. Sid would be good for this, but you think about what we remember growing up as sports fans, team sports fans, and we had, you know, we grew up with players that, for the most part, spent their whole careers with teams. You know, unless their talent was, you know, modest and you know, they got released and signed on elsewhere. But, you know, the Yastrzemskis and the Al Kalines and guys that, you know, spent their whole careers with teams. I mean, that was the norm. And then free agency
in all sports,
you
know,
changed the whole landscape.
World,
yeah, of course.
World,
yeah,
sports.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, of course, they were also, I mean, let's be honest, they were slaves.
Well, that's the whole thing. The team owners ran the sport. Now the players run it.
Well, which and it
yeah, now you have longer. The free agency, which you didn't have.
Well, it took a little bit longer, but now the college athletes have finally been unshackled and set free after being completely exploited. I mean, that there wasn't a bigger outcry and demand for that, it always amazed me that it was.
Yeah, God forbid somebody should go out and buy you dinner.
Sickening. I mean, it's bizarre that it was accepted for so long that the NCAA, I don't know who the NCAA, how they managed to hold them captive
forever.
Terrible.
Yeah, I don't know if it was the year he won the Triple Crown or not, but I think it might have been the year after he won the Triple Crown, where Mickey Mantle's salary was lowered because his statistics weren't as strong, as big as they were the year before.
Days.
The owners were tyrants back then. I mean, they can do with anything they want.
Absolutely.
You know, now it's the other way. Now you've got, in football, you've got mediocre, I'm not saying bad, but mediocre quarterbacks, you know, just signing $40 million contracts. I mean, you get somebody like Jimmy Garoppolo, who had he played like four games, and he signs a mega contract. Kirk Cousins, and, you know, all these quarterbacks that, you know, Joe Flacco. These aren't the big-name quarterbacks, yet the bar is being set. It just goes up and up, and you look at Bryce Harper in baseball, you know, 10-year contract. You know, that's the dumbest thing in the world, to sign anybody for 10 years.
Okay.
So what happens, though, is that they get... So they get rid of Bryce Harper, and then they win the World Series. Or they, so you can't tell with sports. Now, sports now is... It's changed in racing, like we just discussed, and it's changed in all the other sports as well. You know, now you have caps. You know, we have this much in cap, so we can go out and get him. We can get rid of him. We can do this. We can do that. You know, you're just basically juggling chess pieces.
Well,
you know, how much you have in cap? Yeah, now they have something called a capologist. You know, like
well,
they
sure.
made it into a science. You know, oh, a capologist. You know, I mean, it's like a meteorologist, any kind of ologist. But, I mean, you know, you put these euphemistic titles on things, you know. But, you know, with horse racing, it's changed in its own way. I think, like I said, I keep talking about the two-year-old sales.
Okay, so
two-year-old sales were nothing. I mean, yearling sales, I remember, they started getting big in the 70s. In the 80s, but before that, I mean, people forget, by the way, Majestic Prince was the leading price, the highest price yielding of all time at $250,000.
Yep. It's not that. It doesn't feel like that's long. That long ago.
No, I mean, you know, I mean, so 250,000 now. Now the majority of $250,000 horses are RNAs. They don't even meet their you know the quote their reserve. So I don't know. I mean, you just look at it, and like I said, it's look how many horses you have in the September sale. You know, thousands. What are you, 4,000-5,000 horses in there?
Absolutely.
And then look at all. So how many 2-year-old sales are there now? How many thousands and thousands of horses go through the 2-year-old sales? And what do? They go out there and they work so fast, it's not natural. And then they give them off to a trainer, and the trainer says it takes 6 months to get these horses back to normal.
We have that discussion all the time. Steve, let me pull up. I've got to get a conversation in with Joe Applebaum and regarding the course.
I think we made the most of our
time. Absolutely.
That was
great,
considering there's not much going on.
Yeah, it was good. It was very good. It was very good. I appreciate it. I next week Thanksgiving, so I will have to move you up a little bit because we'll have the fields for the 2-year-olds. So maybe
okay.
we'll figure
Wednesday
it out.
I will be on the road. So
all right. So maybe we'll look. You know what? It might be Friday. Might do a preview on Friday for the Saturday action. All right?
Friday actually, I'll be on the road coming back the other way.
Okay. All right. All right. So we'll see. We'll do it on the fly. We'll figure it out. I appreciate it, though. This was great.
All right.
Steve Haskin, everybody. And we covered a lot of the 2-year-old racing as well as the interesting California Chrome topic. And certainly Joe Applebaum from his off the hook operation, his breeding and sales prep operation and he could address some of those topics. But the reason we want to talk to Joe, though, is what has gone on a second round of the state government trying to use the industry as a pinata.